Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I am so excited to be bringing you my guest, Travis Johnson. Travis has a podcast called The Nonprofit Architect, where he shares his perspective as the former vice president of Books by Vets, a board member at the Shine Foundation, a benefactor of over $20,000, a volunteer with over 1,500 hours, a fundraiser with more than $500,000 raised, provided seed money for 6 startup nonprofits, event coordinator, and published author. Travis is currently an active duty officer in the United States Navy, married with 2 children on move number 50. His humble beginnings included 36 moves before graduating high school at age 17, 6 dates, 5 foster homes, surviving 2 murder attempts, and getting in serious trouble with the law. Although this was very rough, there was always a person, group, or church willing to help him and his family. Now that he's in a position to give back, he's made it his mission to help the helpers. He also spent 15 years helping 400 families pay off $6 million in debt. Hi, Travis. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Amanda. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about your upbringing and what was it like to move so many times as a child?
Sucked. Oh, were you hoping for more than that?
Just a little bit more, a little bit more context.
Yeah. So I have to start off with jokes and laugh because if you really get into this stuff and you really get drawn into the things that happen, it can be very heartbreaking and depressing. It all stems from my mother having bipolar disorder. So every time that she would have and be in need of treatment and need to go to a facility, my sister and I would have to move somewhere, whether it be with another family member into a foster care, whatever that looked like. And just the nature of things in the 80s and 90s, when you didn't pay your bills because you were in treatment, you would get out and have to go somewhere new because you didn't have any place to live. And when you're constantly going in and out of treatment or essentially just living off the government, you don't have a lot of money for things either. So a lot of trailer parks, a lot of foster homes, a lot of time just bouncing all over the place, kindergarten, second grade, fourth grade, seventh grade. I was in 3 different schools during each of those school years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of fun there.
Yeah. That I couldn't imagine being that young and having to go through all those changes. Cause when you're little, you don't fully understand things. So it would just be very confusing. You know, would you say that that's accurate? It was confusing.
Well, it wasn't until I found out that wasn't what everyone else was doing.
Okay.
What's interesting is as we develop as people from birth to 7 years of age, we're in complete receive mode. We don't have any kind of internal filter. Like when someone jokes with us and like, oh, you're just crazy. You take that on board is that you are crazy. So like that's who you are. That's your persona. So moving all the time and always being new and always being in new places and always being in a new school, it was how I was programmed. So it wasn't really that odd until I found out that I was the only one doing it. I think it was in fourth grade. They're like, why the heck do you move around all the time? And I was like, what do you mean? Like everybody does this. And they're like, no, they don't. In fact, all of the people in here in this room have been here their entire lives. You're the only one that's been, you know, in and out. And I was like, what? I had no idea. Because how would I know? Right? How would I have any idea that that's not how life works if you're not shown something different?
Right, exactly. Then how did that, you know, that realization, like what, how did that make you feel? How did that change your perspective on your life as it was in fourth grade?
It was, you know, leading up to that point, it was either kind of sad or happy, but now I was angry. Like, how can this happen? You know, who's doing this to me? And you're in that spot where you really are the victim and you're in the victim in that moment, you don't have a choice. And it took me a while to figure it out, but just because I was the victim yesterday doesn't mean I don't have the choice today to take action, take responsibility, get the healing I need to move forward. Now I'm saying this as a nearly 40-year-old man and not as a fourth grade student. Right. It's easy to stay like that now, but in the midst of it, I started lying, I started cheating, I started stealing, I started not being a good person because I didn't know how to react and process those things, those feelings of what I was having. And immediately after I started being a jerk, right? So I started being a jerk, we stopped moving. I was like the rest of fourth grade, fifth grade and sixth grade in the same place. And I was like, geez, I finally just okay with being kind of a jerk about it. And then we just stay. And I'm like, oh, now I have to deal with the things that I've created instead of the things other people created for me.
Yeah, that's so, that's so eye-opening. I couldn't imagine, like I said earlier, like being a kid, and I didn't live that life, but I could see me of reacting the same way, you know, because you're acting out, you know, you're reacting the only way you know how as a child. We don't, like you said, we don't have any of that, life experience to really see other perspectives of what's actually going on. So we act out and we do things that don't maybe we wouldn't have done prior to that just to feel better, you know, and to get that anger out where we don't know how to do that in a healthy way. So, yeah, that can cause a lot of problems.
I actually had a friend explain this in an interesting way the other day. Like when we have a feeling, all the different feelings we have are in different vibrations in our body. And for men in particular, when something in there starts bouncing around and you don't let it out, it bounces around and starts causing damage. So it was good that I was expressing those things. I probably wasn't expressing them in the most healthiest, you know, ways, but I was expressing them. So I was, you know, releasing these feelings that were bouncing around inside of me, which I think was super helpful to actually experience and actually do and express those feelings. I can't imagine what my life would have been like if I would have internalized those.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I think too that even as adults, we tend to internalize a lot of our emotions and how we feel about things because we fear that judgment. But as kids, I don't think we have that much of a filter. So we're better able to just, you know, like that's why toddlers have tantrums. That's why my 8-year-old daughter to this day will scream and get angry when I tell her she can't, you know, put her dolls or whatever she wants to do that day that just doesn't make sense to me, right? So, and they get angry about that because they don't have that filter to internalize. I can't say that across the board. I'm sure there are kids out there who do internalize their pain. But, you know, from what I've seen in my experience, we normally act out. And that's usually a sign, you know, the way you were acting out, that's a sign that like you needed someone's guidance. So with that point being brought up, like who did you have someone in your life that kind of helped guide you out of acting out, or did you kind of just figure that out on your own?
Well, there was a few people along the way. You know, I didn't really consider myself having a best friend, you know, younger than fourth grade. I had moved around so many times already that you just never, you meet people and you're around for a couple of months and then you're gone. And you don't really get a chance to like really develop a relationship. And it's not like today. It's not like I just had them on my smartphone and I could just contact them whenever, right? This is the 90s. If you hadn't written down their phone number and or their address, there was no way of contacting them. Right. You could be like, hey, mom, remember that person from when you were in the hospital and never had a chance to meet? Do you know his phone number? You don't. Well, then I guess I can't contact them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so you're completely removed from all these people that you had experiences with. And unless you can go back and track them down, luckily we have, you know, things like social media and different things, you can actually track down people and get a hold of them. But because you were there for such a short period of time, they don't hardly remember who you are. So it's very interesting to see, you know, what that looks like. And I'm a bad podcast guest right now. I don't remember the question.
Oh, that's fine. No, I asked you if there was anyone in your life back then that kind of helped guide you through your experiences as you were going through them.
Oh, man, that hasn't happened. I think it's the first time as a guest I've been lost in the questioning. But, you know, you process some things in real speed and live action. Hey, we're going live. We're doing it live. And sometimes you get a little bit lost in your own. Yeah, there was a few people I finally had, that was a long talk to get back to, but finally got a best friend. It turns out we bought his old house, Ryan Cornemone, and our moms had been friends for years. So because they had been friends for years, and even though he was a little bit older than me, like we stuck together throughout all the different moves. Cause even though we were moving, we weren't really moving that far. This is like Northern Minnesota, kind of around the same county. When you don't have a car or a phone, these are impossible things to overcome. Yeah. But when you become an adult, this is like a, 15 to 45 minute trip, and then you can be hanging out with your buddies again. So I found someone that was nearly my own age. He's maybe 2 years older than me, that we got along quite a bit. And then there was a few adults in our world, Dale Chaden and Dennis Jensen, that ended up really, pouring into my life and being a source of being that rock and being that steady hand. But there were so many groups and so many organizations that were willing to keep us sheltered and clothed and fed over the years that, it worked itself out. But really, I was able to stay pretty objective and not emotionalize everything that happened. And it could be easy to do, right? Change just in general. You can be like, why are we doing this? And as soon as you say it that way, your little filter in your brain's like, oh, emotion attached to this. This must be important. I'm going to put this in the file that we pull up anytime this thing happens. And we're going to review this file. And it says, oh, yep, right here. You're supposed to be upset. So by not emotionalizing the things that happened every time they happened, I have a lot less bad memories. Mm. I have a lot less angst built up and anger built up, and asking the question why in those moments when you're angry really is a damaging question. When we ask another adult why, like, why would you do this? Like, it's inflammatory almost immediately, right?
Yes.
And you ask that as a kid when you're not able to process things, and like, why on earth are we doing this again? Right? It takes and creates that bad file, that bad emotion, that bad thing in your being. And if you ask different questions, like, well, what are we doing now? Or how can I move forward? Or does this thing that's happening have anything to do with me?
Yeah.
And when we can kind of delay or deflect some of these pivotal moments, these crazy things that happen in our world, our body processes that as, yeah, we're moving, but we're going to figure out the next thing.
Yeah. That's powerful to do that, to be able to, I don't want to say flip the script because that's overused, but like you're taking something that normally would be, negative, and, but being curious, right? You're curious. Well, why is this happening? Is this has something to do with me or not? Just figuring out the truth behind it instead of getting upset and angry and creating that file, as you said, for your brain to kind of go back to every time that thing happens. I really like that. I wanted to talk on, as well as growing up with a mother who is bipolar. My mother is also bipolar, but her bipolar didn't really come out until I was a teen. So I wanted to hear more on that and what was, as you were going through, like, where was these experiences? Like, where was your mother? Like, what was your relationship with her? And how was that experience growing up with her being bipolar?
Well, before fourth grade, like, it was kind of seamless. If I was living with grandma or living with mom, I didn't really know. I knew who my mom was. I loved my mom. And when she wasn't around, I missed my mom. But it wasn't like a relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't really a factor. I just knew I was sleeping either at my mom's house or my grandma's house. And that was kind of it. It wasn't until the fourth grade. So I talk about fourth grade a lot. Like, it still bothers me. It doesn't still bother me based on the stuff I've been writing about. Like, it doesn't bother me. But like, I started fourth grade in Underwood, Minnesota. And I was at my grandma's house. And then she split up with her husband at the time. And we moved to Fergus Falls, which seemed like, when you're a kid, it's forever away. It takes forever to get to Fergus Falls from Underwood. I think it's like 7 miles.
Oh, that's it. I was going to be like, how far is it?
So it's like It's like 10 minutes, right? 10 minutes down the road. I'm like, this is just taking forever when you're a kid, you know, moved across, you know, basically across town if you're in a bigger town. And, you know, started school there, ended up getting glasses. So, you know, that was super. Being the new kid, big ugly glasses, because every pair of glasses in the 80s was hideous.
Right.
This is 89, maybe in the 90. And then mom gets out of treatment. And she got out of treatment because she dared a friend of her to marry her. She was in her 30s and he was 19 and he married my mom. And at the time, I didn't know how weird this was because everyone that's an adult is just bigger than me, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And looking back, I'm like, you married a 19-year-old? That's crazy. That is just wild. But that just lends itself to just how, you know, volatile and crazy my life really was. And then moved to Elbow Lake, which was 22 miles away, just super far. And was my third school in the fourth grade. And this was a school that wasn't in the same town as where we lived. So the middle school was like another 7 miles down the road to the next town. By the way, 7 miles keeps coming up because that's exactly how far train stops were. Back in the day, they had to be 7 miles apart for some reason. I'm sure one of the engineers out there could tell us why, or historians.
Yeah.
But no, not something I need to clog up my brain. But so again, I end up in the third town, third different school. And my sister's going to school in Elbow Lake, but I'm going to school in Barrett, which is 7 miles down the road. And it's like a fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, like a kind of a middle school. And and I'm just done with life. I'm like, this sucks. Like, why do I gotta meet all these new kids? Why do I gotta learn a whole new town? You know, this isn't like when you've got Google Maps and MapQuest or whatever else, and you can just kind of like GPS your way through town. Like, you got to ride your bike all over the town to figure out like what the town is. Like, you have to go learn the town. Like, I can't even tell you how many hours I spent on my bicycle riding around trying to figure out town. Like, great. Now I got to map out a whole new town, meet a whole new kids. And, you know, this is the first time I really understood like what bullying was and picking on the new kid. And I was like, why are they talking to me this way? Like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm just trying to ride the damn bus to school and you kids won't leave me alone. Like, what? I don't get it. And, you know, it really, really got to me, all this crazy stuff, because, you know, grandma leaving the husband, I remember hearing the fights and the screams and, you know, all of these things. And then I remember getting to that next school in Fergus Falls and just like how different the school system was. I didn't know that's what it was. Right. Yeah. But I was like, man, they're talking about a bunch of stuff I have never heard about.
Wow.
You know, and then you go to the next school and then other kids were being jerks. And I'm like, I don't even know what the hell's going on anymore. Yeah. Like, just trying to like be a kid. I'm like, this is just nuts. All of this. And, you know, so glad that I'm not in fourth grade anymore.
Yeah, I could imagine. That seems like a very hard year for you.
Yes, yes.
Very hard. You know, you said you have a sister. What was your relationship like with her?
Well, as far as I understand, she has some kind of diagnosable disorder, like to say bipolar disorder, but she would disagree with me. She's not going to counseling. She's not taking medications. And she says there's nothing wrong with her. But based on her behavior, I would probably disagree with her assessment. But she took everything a lot worse than I did. She, a very emotional being, and there's nothing wrong with being emotional beings, but how we process our emotions as they happen has a huge impact on who we are. It really does.
That's true.
Yeah. So true. I don't currently have a relationship with my sister at all. Actually, we got out to Elba Lake, and I think that over that summer there, she tried to kill me.
What? Your sister?
Yeah. The two murder attempts were my sister and my mother.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What? Sorry, that just like completely threw me off.
Yeah, I got thrown off earlier and now you're thrown off. So now we're even.
So you say your sister and your mother attempted to murder you. Like, how did that come to be? Like, what?
I know how one happened. I can't remember what got my sister so fired up, but I do remember her chasing me around the house with a butcher knife, lunging after me, trying to stab me, trying to get me.
And how old were you at that point with your sister?
I was 10 or 11 and she was a year or two younger than me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And then you said that you remember the one with your mom better. Is that the one you remember more?
Yeah, that was about 5 years later. I was 15. We were down visiting her brother, my uncle, and she was going through an episode talking all the nonsense that she does. Mm-hmm. And so not all bipolars are the same, right? There's different things. She has some schizophrenic features. She has audio and visual hallucinations, more audio than any other. So no kidding. Voices talking to her, other voices that she hears. And she was losing it. It was the middle of the night, you know, two or so in the morning. We got kicked out of his house. And I drove her to the hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota, again, somewhere in middle of Minnesota. And brought her to the hospital and was going to get her checked in. And it's, you know, 3 a.m, right? So my sister and I fell asleep on the hospital beds waiting for someone to process or whatever the heck is going to happen. You know, we don't know. And I wake up and my mom is straddling me on the hospital bed with a pillow trying to smother me and snuff me out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Luckily I was 15, stronger than her. So I could push her off. I pushed her off me. I grabbed my sister. We ran out of the hospital, got in the car and started driving. Drove probably for an hour or more till we get to a rest area, locked the doors and fell asleep.
That, like, I have goosebumps. I couldn't imagine going through that. You know what? So do you have a relationship with your mother today? Like, are you close with her?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. You know, if you're willing to take medication and go to sleep and, you know, take care of yourself and do the things you need to do to be mentally well most days, I understand. And I'm willing to have a relationship with you. If you're like my sister and you deny everything and everyone else's, you know, everything is everyone else's fault. I mean, good luck getting the whole rest of the world to go to therapy to solve your problem. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Good luck. Good luck. It's not going to happen.
So
her life is a disaster, by any measure that anyone would use to measure a quality of life. And, you know, we didn't have a relationship. I moved out of the house, ended up moving out when I was 16 to live with grandma full time. I told my mom, look, if you love me, you're just not going to say anything about this. You're just going to let it happen. You're not going to say nothing.
Yeah.
And she never did, and finished up high school and I moved away. And really in that moment, I left my sister with my mom. But I couldn't think of anyone other than myself at the time. I had to get myself into a safe, stable place. I couldn't be around that anymore. It wasn't until years later, like, I don't know, 15 or so years later, that, you know, my sister moved, I'm in Oklahoma City. My sister moved down here to try to like rebuild the relationship. I hadn't really talked to her in years. And honestly, I hadn't even thought about her because trying to build my own life. And, I didn't want her to move down here because I know what kind of person she is. And I hear things from that neck of the woods, make it down. You know what your sister did? I'm like, well, tell me. It'd be super, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a friend, this is a little segue into why I was willing to try to build a relationship with her. I had a friend in the Navy. Well, many, many friends in the Navy, but one in particular committed suicide and his sister moved to Oklahoma City to try to connect with the rest of the family. And she was told like, hey, you know, come on, you can have his house. No big deal. You know, us and the kids are here for you. And she got there. And she left her whole life in Reno and then she got to Oklahoma City and the sister-in-law was like, you know what? No, you can have nothing. So she showed up with her kids moving across the country, was supposed to be moving into a house and then was completely roadblocked from the rest of the family. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give my sister a legitimate shot, my nieces and nephews, my four nieces and nephews, and see what kind of relationship we can build. And, you know, reintegrated her, you know, cautiously into our lives and immediately blew it with us and gave her a handful of chances. And at every turn, just didn't act like a human being. And I finally had to sever a relationship. I was getting stationed overseas. I went to the Kingdom of Bahrain for a year, this little island thing on the side of the wall. And I had seen her and seen her and the kids. It was January or February in Oklahoma City. Not the coldest, but not warm either. She pulls up. I meet her at a local restaurant. Her back window is smashed out. She's got one kid with no jacket, one kid with no shirt, one kid in shorts, and one kid with no shoes on. And I just want to say goodbye and give a little bit of encouragement to my nieces and nephews on my way out. I drive across country to go to the Naval War College up in Rhode Island. I love driving. There's no one that can bother me, right? And you go to the airport, you've got like all these other people and you got all this stuff and we're boarding and we're not boarding. And then I would fly up to Rhode Island and I wouldn't have a car to get around
in. That's the worst.
That's the worst. Gotta have a car. Well, I'm going to rent a car for 3 months. Gross. I don't want to pay for that.
Yeah, not doing that.
So I drove my truck up there and I'm driving across Tennessee and I got a phone call from her husband at the time, my sister's husband. He's like, hey, your sister's up here. They were in the midst of separating. He went to be with his family in Pennsylvania and we were in Oklahoma City. And I'm like, her and the kids are up there. He's like, well, I haven't seen the kids. I can just say for sure that she's up here. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, what is she doing up there? She's like, well, she came up to get her half of like the tax return. And I'm like, they have digital ways of transferring that.
Yeah.
Okay. I get a call the next day. There's a system on the that the Red Cross uses to get messages to military members.
Okay.
Something terrible happens. And someone called me and they had a Red Cross message. And I was like, oh my God, who died? That's your first thought is who died or what happened? Last time I got a Red Cross message, my grandma had an aneurysm. She survived the aneurysm, but I got the Red Cross message. I was like, oh my God, what happened? My sister used that system to contact me from jail.
Oh, no.
She called like my last command to let them know that she was in jail and trying to contact me. I don't know who does that. I don't understand how they would do that or why they would choose to do that. What happened was is she went and slashed his tires and his dad's tires and they reported it and she went to jail. And I talked to her and I was like, where's the kids? Kids were in Oklahoma City in a new trailer they moved into. So then I'm driving across country, coordinating with my wife to go pick the kids up, calling the kids. So her husband, none of the kids were his. So these were all from a previous relationships, from three previous relationships. So I called the dad of most of the kids. And I said, hey, if you want at any time in your life to have custody of the kids, Megan's got them. My sister's in jail. Go get them. So him and his dad drove down from Minnesota overnight through blizzard to come pick up the kids. So I'm in Rhode Island now. I'm at the War College going through an operational planning course. And April hits and she gets released from jail in Pennsylvania. She calls me from Minnesota from her cell phone. And she's like, I do not understand what a terrible person my ex is. I was like, okay. I went to Easter service and he's screaming in the church at me. The kids are crying. I don't understand what an asshole he is. And I was like, you have a restraining order filed against you. You don't get to see the kids. The fact that you went to the church you know that they would be at thousands of miles away on Easter, you're the problem.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that you're the problem in this scenario, I can't help you. And I haven't talked to her since.
Wow. So you're saying that she she had like this restraining order against her, and she showed up somewhere because the kids were there and then tried to turn around and say that her ex was crazy. That's what I'm gathering here. Wow. Yeah, I could see why you don't have a relationship with her anymore. That's, you know, we as humans, we can only take so much. You can only try to help someone so many times. They have to want to help themselves.
It's just like Vampire Diaries, right? They can't hurt me if I don't let them in.
Right.
If I let them in, I know they're going to suck the life out of me. So why would I let them in?
Exactly.
No amount of shared DNA gives someone enough permission to treat you that way. I don't know who needs to hear that right now, but no amount of shared DNA give someone permission to treat you that way unless you allow them to treat you that way. I don't care if it's your sister, your mother, your best friend, or anybody. They don't have the authority to treat you that way unless you give them permission. Don't give them permission to see. Say yes to your boundaries. Be nice to yourself first and treat those people accordingly. Don't allow that in your world.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if it's your sister.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, I actually needed to hear that today. You know, I deal with, you know, this very briefly tell you this, like my mother is bipolar and she's very toxic in my life, but I feel like that, well, she's my mom. I have to, you know, I have to keep letting her back in, even though like I'll create some space and then I'll get one. Not that long ago, my mother, just to give you context, I didn't answer the phone for 3 days. I didn't talk to her for 3 days. And she texted me and said that she didn't hear from me. She was going to have the police come to my house to do a well person check on me. Like, what?
They will do whatever they can to get in it. So I was actually talking to my mom last night. And she brought up something about my sister. And then she said, I'm so glad she's not in my life causing problems anymore. And I said, what was the thing that finally made you, you know, put up those barriers? Well, it was when my sister was going to take her out to lunch, got in the car, drove a couple hundred miles. And then while they were driving, my sister turned and punched my mom in the face 3 times. That was finally the incident that made my mom stop talking to her own daughter.
Wow.
Here's the deal. If you're having people in your life tell you that someone is toxic, that someone shouldn't be treating you that way, whatever it is, take the step of enforcing those boundaries now before you get punched in the face, because you can really avoid that step by just turning them off. You're going to feel bad and feel guilty for a little bit until you realize just how much better your life is without that person.
Yeah. Wow. That almost made me cry. Yeah, that's, you know, that's really true. And, you know, when you deal with people with mental illnesses, like we were talking about, and they don't take their medications, and you brought up like with your mom, like as long as she's taking her meds and she goes to bed, like that's what I deal with mine. So I understand. My mom does not sleep. She doesn't take her meds. She's off them. She's on them. And it's just constant back and forth chaos. And it's just, it's a lot. And you're so right. Like no amount of DNA allows someone to treat you that way. Like that's, I want to like put that in quotes somewhere. So
you can.
Travis Johnson.
You can. No amount of shared DNA gives someone the right to treat you that way. And if they make you feel like you're like, oh, I have to go to family dinner, but so-and-so is going to be there and be a jerk. Don't go to family dinner. Let it know why. Tell that person they're not welcome. There's nothing wrong with enforcing the goodness in your home. You don't have to expose your kids to that. You don't have to expose your spouse to that. There's no rule that says that. Well, I'm going to be the jerk that doesn't go home for Thanksgiving. Well, they're the jerk that invited their toxic whatever aunt, uncle, sister, brother, whatever into the house. And you don't have to put up with it. You don't.
Yeah. Wow. You're teaching me things right now, Travis. I'm like, I need to take that into consideration when I think about, you know, family gatherings. And because it's true, like me being who, you know, the way I am, like I do feel guilty. It's like, well, if I don't go, like I won't see my dad. Or if I don't go, this person will be upset.
See your dad the next week.
Yeah, exactly.
If only there was 365 and a quarter days, you could see them any other day.
Right.
If only.
If only.
If only.
Wow. Yeah. Your message is about, you know, family and just how to create those boundaries. Like that's so important. And anybody who's listening, who may be like me, who's still stuck in that cycle of feeling that guilt around not being in, you know, having a certain family member rather in your life, like, listen to Travis, like, we don't have to take that kind of treatment.
You don't have to. And there's people that have friends that every time they hop on the phone, they only talk about themselves or how you can help them or try to make you feel guilty for not helping them. It's only a one-way relationship. You're going to find out that you were never friends in the first place. Or if you were friends, something has changed. Give them, that person, the opportunity to be like, hey, look, every time we talk, you talk about you. Every time we get together, you're piling all your stuff on me. Every time you call me, you need something. And that's not how our friendship works. I'm willing to be friends with you, but you've got to understand that it's a two-way street. If you can't make it a two-way street, I can't be your friend anymore because you're not being a friend to me.
Yeah. And that's creating those healthy boundaries that we all need in our lives. You know, whether it's a friend, like you said, that does that, your family, a coworker, even. I've experienced toxic coworkers too. And you just have to know how to stand in your own and be able to say no and not allow those people to treat you that way anymore. And you have to be able to have those boundaries and really, like, my whole thing is looking inward for love and acceptance. Like, you have to know who you are and what you will accept into your life, because at the end of the day, you're the only one who can control that. No one, you know, because your mom upset you, well, did you allow her to? Did you, you know, welcome that phone call? Did you pick up the phone knowing what's going to happen? Then you only have yourself to blame. You're in control of the what you let into your life.
And you can't outperform your self-image. Those ladies that we all know, like, oh, I can't believe I'm still in another boyfriend, another toxic relationship. Men are all jerks. They're treating you based on the way you feel about yourself. You are attracting people that will treat you the way that you feel about yourself. So until you treat yourself like the goddess, the masterpiece, the amazing creature that you are, you're going to attract all the other garbage out there, and you're going to wonder why it's all them. It's not them. It's you. Treat yourself better. Please, 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 dear God, treat yourself better. I want to say this to the lady. I end up talking to a lot of ladies about this. Saying no, enforcing a boundary, and not allowing people to behave a certain way and being direct, all of those things are being nice to you first. None of those things are being mean. None of them are being mean. All of them are being nice to you. Oh, I just can't talk that way. That's being mean. That is not true. If you're in your head right now saying, Travis, you're full of crap, or I don't believe you, or yes, it is, you are wrong. And I'm not okay with you being wrong in this situation. You have got to change how you interact with these people to take care of you first. Because if you're not taking care of you, you can't take care of the people that you love.
That's so true. You know, I went through a lot of toxic relationships throughout my past, and I always felt that way. Like, well, you know, why am I attracting these men? Why am I attracting these types of friendships? Like, why? You know, why are they choosing me? Like, it was always that, like, they're choosing me, not I'm choosing them. And it wasn't until I changed the way I thought about myself and really started to see myself as someone that was worthy of good things that, oh my goodness, now I don't have toxic people in my life. I mean, I still have my mother, but that's, I'm working on that. But, you know, I don't have these negative friendships. I don't have, you know, my husband is amazing. He treats me with respect because I deserve that. I don't deserve to be,
deserve that.
Yeah. Everybody, yes. Like every single person on this planet, no matter what you've been through, you deserve to be respected, period.
If you look at the Bible, and I know everyone's not a Bible fan, right? I'm not getting into all the theology and all that nonsense. But God ends up using the people that would seem the least likely. God used David as a shepherd boy, and shepherds was considered the lowliest career field out there. If you were a shepherd, you were the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
You know, he used Moses, who was unsure of himself. He used David, who was trying to figure out a term that is family friendly.
You can use whatever term you like. We're not necessarily family friendly.
He was an adulterer. He was an adulterer, okay. Right? He used people that were drunks. He used people that that did taxes. Tax collectors back in the day were very unscrupulous. He used all these different type of people. He didn't go out. He didn't go to the Pharisees. He didn't go to the churches to grab people out of leadership to do these amazing things. He did these amazing things with people that were less than, with people that were the least of these. If you look at my history, and based on some of the stories that we've talked about today, just being a foster kid, most of society would be like, yeah, we're okay if Travis never amounts to anything. No one would fault me. No one would be like, oh yeah, well, he's a foster kid. That's okay. Like, no one expected anything out of me. You have to expect greatness from yourself. Muhammad Ali said, I am the greatest, far before he was any good at boxing. He was doing those emotional, he was creating those emotional good files in his system. So when a situation arose, his little file clerk in his head would look through and be like, you're the greatest. It says right here. I see file after file after file that says you're the greatest. So what's going to happen? He's going to go out and do great things. What about those people that are attached emotionally to something and it says, I'm worthless. I'm nothing. I can't do anything. I never do anything right. I always bring right. Your little file clerk's going to be like, yep, sure are. Says you're worthless right here because you keep telling yourself that same story. You keep creating those negative files. Stop adding negative files to your brain. Stop it. Stop it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I could literally just keep talking and talking to you. Your story is fascinating, Travis. Like, you have so many wonderful things that you've shared with us, and you know, your story is left me speechless multiple times. Let's just put it that way. And anyone who knows me knows Amanda's never speechless. So that says a lot.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All of Amanda's friends can now use this against her later in life.
But how can people find you, Travis? Where can we connect with you?
You go into Google, you put in these words, nonprofit architect podcast. Nonprofit is one word. It's not hyphenated. If you pull up those three words in Google, you will find that I'm the first 4.5 pages of Google. If you want to find my Facebook, my LinkedIn, my podcast, if you want to find my website, if you want to find anything about me, those three words, Nonprofit Architect Podcast, and you will find me, find all my stuff on my website. I've got the Nonprofit Podcast Network. We've got a dozen shows dedicated to helping nonprofits. We've got the Veteran Podcast Network, which is 40 veteran-related shows talking about veteran issues. You can find all of my guest appearances. So you'll be able to find this interview with Amanda on my website. And we have some resources that help nonprofits do things. And we have our ultimate podcast guide. You can find all of these things at nonprofitarchitect.org. I'm excited to announce that we are turning our podcast guide into a course, building it right now for Forbes Business School. You will be able to get college credits from taking my course.
Wow.
That should be available spring of next year. Yeah.
Wow. I'm excited for you. That's awesome. Wow. So just one last question for you before we go. What is your number one tip for everyone listening to allow the good things into their lives?
Regardless of how you feel at this moment, you are worth all of the good things. And until you onboard that, there's not going to be anything that I can do to help you or anyone else can help you. It really is the choice, and you have the choice. Zig Ziglar talks about a pair of brothers that he met. He met the one brother as a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, great outlook, just an amazing man. And he's like, why are you the way you are? You see, my father was an alcoholic. I had no choice. And then he met his brother who was an alcoholic and his life was terrible and in shambles. And he asked the man, he's like, how did your life become like this? He's like, well, you see, my father was an alcoholic. I had no choice. Both brothers used the same reasoning and saying they had no choice, but one said they had no choice other than to emulate the example given, and one had no choice other than to reject the example he was giving. Any person that you interact with, family, friend, or otherwise, they're going to teach you something. They're going to teach you either what to do or what not to do. I had the example of all the examples of things not to do, and I didn't follow them. Right? I didn't follow those examples. And my sister had the same experiences. And she said, this is exactly how I'm supposed to operate. So here's the example I was given. You have to choose. If you're hanging around a bunch of people that are in shape and going to the gym, you're going to find yourself going to the gym. If you're hanging around with a bunch of millionaires, you're going to learn how they act and behave. And before you know it, you're going to be a millionaire. If you're hanging around people that go to the casino and blow their paycheck each and every Friday, you're going to find yourself broke each and every week. Because the people that you surround yourself, whether you choose to or not, they are going to align with the goals that you have, or you're going to take on their goals with good, bad, or indifferent. So make sure you're hanging around the right people and choosing to let the good stuff in.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much, Travis, for being here. It's been a pleasure having you and learning more about your story and all the wonderful things that you're doing in the world.
Thanks a lot, Amanda. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, and as a reminder to everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine, regardless of your past. Make sure to hit the subscribe or follow button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.